There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey, it's the Nerdist Podcast number 322. The Nerdist Podcast Live is actually going and doing a couple of shows in other cities. Well, one and a half other cities. On March 15th, Nerdist Podcast Live is going to be part of Gilda's Laugh Fest in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And then on March 29th, we are going to be in Anaheim, California, near WonderCon. So that's why I say city and a half. It's a, you know, 40 minutes from Los Angeles. We're sort of, I mean, it is out of town. You know, oftentimes, Skydart and I would go down to Anaheim, go to the Magic Kingdom, and stay in the hotel there. So it is a day. It's a trip. It counts as out of town. You can go to nerdist.com/calendar. To get tickets on those, and then a bunch of stand-up dates coming up. After Talking Dead wraps in April and May, I'm doing a metric shit ton of dates. I guess it really should only be a metric shit ton if I'm touring Canada.
You totally stole that phrase. That was my phrase that you totally just stole.
That's one of those phrases that everyone thinks they invented, Chloe.
It, I always say metric fuck ton, and then you just changed it a little bit, and now you're claiming it's yours.
I trust me when I tell you that I've been saying metric fuck ton since before.
Since before when? Christopher, since before when?
Since before I met you.
You
thought I was going to say before you were born.
Yeah, I did think you were.
I mean, how would that even be possible? How would that even be possible? I'm creepy. The Nerds Podcast would like to welcome its new sponsor, Ting.com. Ting is mobile phone service that makes sense. A lot of mobile plans have hidden fees, steep penalties, arbitrary rules, unnecessary premiums. They'll soak you like a sponge. As a result, mobile phone users are paying a lot and they're not getting a great service. So it's a completely new approach. It's totally user-friendly. Clarity, usability, savings. There's no hidden fees. There's no overages. The website is simple. You can actually talk to a person when you call if you want customer service. You get customer service 8 to 8. Anytime between 8 and 8, a human being will pick up the phone. If you call their customer service line. Excellent online support as well. Active customer forums. Simple and powerful help ticketing system. Video tutorials. Video startup guides. So much more. It's brought to you by Two Cows and anyone who's been on the internet since 1994, as I have, has most likely downloaded one or many things off of Two Cows over the years. So, a $25 service credit or device discount for those of you who are Nerdist Podcast listeners, who go to nerdist.ting.com and sign up. Thanks again to Ting for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is a wonderful episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Which I don't think is a... I don't think that's a jerky thing to declare this a wonderful episode, because it is. This is my friend Shadi Potosky, who runs Puny Entertainment, which is a fucking awesome animation house that did the Time Hole pilot for Furman and I. And over the years, we've just tried to always find different ways to work together. And Shadi recently began gender reassignment and has been very public about it on social media and has made a stunning transformation. I mean, absolutely stunning. I mean, the pictures are awesome, and I think she looks fantastic. And so, you know, just wanted to come in and talk about it. I mean, I asked, of course. I didn't record a conversation and then just decided to put it out. I said, hey, would you want to come on and, you know, just kind of talk about the process, let people know what you're going through, and she said, yeah, and I honestly can tell you that, and I mean this absolutely sincerely, this is one of my favorite conversations that I've ever had on the Nerdist Podcast. So I hope you enjoy it as well, and I'm positive that you will. The Nerdist Podcast, episode number 322, with my good friend Shadi Petoskey.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I've started recording.
Because
we just get into it.
Jesus.
I know. But you're going to have to get closer to the microphone. All right, good.
Just like this, Chaddy. Just like this.
Just Matt just mashes
Matt
it into
Matt
his
Matt falls
fist.
Asleep just on the mics all the time. He just ends up like... Mm.
Can you hear me?
And then you hear like...
Yes, we can hear your beard.
Cool.
Which is fucking unreal, by the way.
I'm really proud of it.
I'm so jealous of your...
I got Scott Mosier really inspired me to grow a beard. So I did.
Well, we're not here to talk about your beard and Scott Mosier.
Fine.
Our good friend, Shadi Petoskey, is here.
Hey.
So,
how's it going, guys?
Here's a little Polish? What is it? Petoskey?
It is. It's nice. Polish. I'm adopted, though. I'm not actually Polish blood at all.
Have you looked into what...
There go Jesus, all my jokes.
Who your like real birth parents are?
No, it's adopted
to see if they're
by
like
a
Irish
father.
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
There's English in there.
It doesn't count. Someone adopted it.
That story is no longer fascinating to me, Shadi. Move on.
Right. I know that I was when I got Shadi's number. I know I was drunk because it like the last name is Pataka, and it's just like random letters. Like I was like, I'll know what it means.
It just sounds like a Dennis Miller bit.
Sounds like Dr. Evil doing the Macarena.
So here's a little backstory. I don't remember how did I get hooked up with Puny the first time? Was it through Furman? Was it through Mike Furman?
Must have been.
It was through Mike Furman. Do you own Puny or you just sort
I
of
own it, yeah.
You own Puny, which it. Is Puny is one of the fucking best animation studios.
Let's hear some credits. We got the opening credits of Super.
Super.
We got
Hard and Firm's
Hard
pilot.
Hard and Firm's pilot.
But it's beyond that. Puny is this, and what I always explain to people.
Yo, Gabba,
I was gearing up for Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yo Gabba Gabba.
Like, we only talk about Chris's thing. The two things that Chris has done, and then we stop.
I'm sorry, I wasn't on Yo Gabba Gabba, so
ooh.
Doesn't count. But your company was largely based in Minneapolis for a long time, and it was this really cool. It is this really cool collective of artists, and you guys do a lot of commercial work, which frees you up to do fun, nerdy comedy projects that you like.
Yeah, for very low money,
and thank you for that.
Because
you guys
talk about your business plan here. Yeah.
You guys did Time Hole.
This is how good her business plan is. This kid that started a awesome little podcast network, Dustin Martin. You gave up space in your offices.
Yeah,
just
we bought them microphones, and it's pretty much the same as this place. We hooked them up.
But you guys just like making stuff that you like.
Yeah, it's all about making stuff and just doing things when you can.
And right? And the fact that you guys are based in Minneapolis, it's a little bit cheaper than if you were based in New York or
Don't
Chicago.
Don't tell our employees there that, but yeah, that's the idea.
So,
there's some great art schools there. I'm going to now Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce. There's some great art schools there. There's a lot of talent there. It's like design oriented and it's just a great place to be, cheaper space. It's great.
So I
moved from there, so fuck it. But like,
but Puny, so if people, they should go to punyentertainment.com, which is your website. But the main reason that I wanted to have you on, besides your animation company, is I guess, I don't know, maybe last year.
It's a very special episode.
It is kind of a special episode, but I think it's important, and I want to, you know, and I'm excited to talk about it. And I hope do you feel okay? Do you feel nervous talking?
Well, we're getting right into my personal. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good.
So I just.
You're shuffling around your seat.
I guess maybe over the, was it right before the holidays?
It was right before, yeah, between Thanksgiving.
Right before the holidays, you posted something which basically just said, "Shadi was Shad." You were.
I wrote, "I'm changing my gender."
I'm changing my gender.
Period.
The end. What were the responses? Did people think you were kidding?
No, I'm, you know, most of my close friends I've known for 7 years or something, but like for me to do it, everybody, you have to, the thing, like, you have to be kind of a douchebag to be mean about it now. I got like one bad letter, but everybody else was just like, great, you know, you go, girl, and stuff like that. So it was like a overwhelmingly positive response, which then just encouraged me to actually do it.
Oh, good.
From that point on, so
good.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I didn't, you know, I guess I had the same response too. I was like, oh fuck that. I mean, I think for me, whenever someone kind of makes those pro themselves decisions where they, you know, whether they pursue something or whether it's they quit, you know, they quit something and pursue something they've been passionate about or become who they are or really are finally at a place where they can go, yeah, I think this is, that's a whole different path and it's hard, it's a hard decision, but this is what makes me happy. I always feel really good. I'm like, good, everyone should be fucking happy. And so I don't know. I felt, I and I had no, it's not like I ever thought about your sexual orientation or what. I just didn't even think about it. It's like, oh, you're Shed. And I just, I, you know, yeah, you're fun and nice and you do great work. And I just never even thought about it. And I was like, oh, fuck, I didn't. Oh, that's awesome. So I thought it was really cool. And I think I even sent you an email that was like, hey, you're fucking, that's awesome. If you, you know.
That's great. Yeah.
But I do want to sort of talk about, because I think maybe, you know, maybe that, I just think, well, maybe there's someone listening who's kind of going through some of the same struggles. Maybe there's something that people can benefit from.
We're here to help you.
That are listening. That, and you're kind of, you're still in the middle of it, really.
At the beginning.
You're in the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's listening to this, is going to hear my voice and it's like, well, that doesn't sound, you know, that's not ladylike or whatever. Like it's, well, this is really common, actually. So like anytime you see a news report on somebody who's transgender and transitioning socially, it's always like, Mrs. Jones going back to school. Now, Mr. Jones, what do the students think? You know, it's like the first day back at school.
Yeah,
like that's,
yeah,
that's when you're interesting. It's never like somebody that's 5 years into it and is assimilated and you don't actually know because they've got like all the shit down and they're like performing gender in like the normative way that everybody expects.
Yeah.
So we're kind of used to just being kind of like, oh, we're interesting now the day we come out and when it's the most awkward and most terrible and terrifying part of our lives. And then that's what like creates, I think, the stereotype of what a trans person is that like, oh, it's like a dude in a dress, like awkwardly, like stubble and makeup or whatever,
like Glenda.
Like a weird voice. Yeah. So this is the kind of the MO. So I'm in the beginning of it, but I think if people know that it's just like it's called a transition versus like a switch, then I feel pretty comfortable talking about it, I guess.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I don't know what's gonna come, but I don't know. I just,
well, you posted that cool video that somebody did where they took a picture of themselves every day during the transition. And it was I think a year and a half, 2 years or
2 years, yeah.
Yeah. And it was pretty incredible because it's so, you realize how subtle and how like how it's just this, it is just a transition.
And that's the problem if you're in it, because you don't, you know,
you just wanna
get
there.
Look at myself every day, right? So like I don't see any changes at all. But then somebody who I haven't seen you know, for 6 months or something will say, like, whoa, you look totally different. And it's like, no, that's impossible. Like, no, I don't. I know I don't. And then it's like, then I'll actually put the photos up side by side and go, oh, yeah, I do. I'm 53 pounds lighter.
Yeah, I was going to say, even since I saw you at New Year's, like you lost tons of weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some.
You look good with hair, too. Because before, you were totally shaved.
Yeah.
But you look...
No, you just weren't paying attention.
But I feel I feel like I wasn't. I mean, you know, when stuff like that happens, I mean, it's not like we were best friends, but I still feel like, oh man, there was a whole social thing that I just missed from someone that I really like. And so part of me felt like, fuck, why would, you know, but.
Well, we're working together too. We didn't.
It wasn't like we were hanging out like every night.
Yeah. So if we're, you know, it's, but the other thing is like the unfortunate thing, because like for me, since I was like a child, you know, 4 years old or something, I was always waiting for people to say like, oh, you little queer boy, like, is there anything you want to tell us? And it never happened. So, like, I was doing something that people didn't catch on to. I think there's a lack of self-awareness there, but I think I'm being, like, super feminine or something, but no one else is saying anything. I remember, like, in grade school, like, spotting the teachers I thought were gay and like going like, hey, Mr. Hamner, like
I just called that a real Hamner name.
Yeah. you douchebag. No, I've forgiven Mr. Hamner because I realized how hard, like, as a teacher in northern Montana or northern Michigan where I grew up, like, you couldn't encourage that behavior. Like, you would have to distance. Like, I was always really mad at the two teachers that I was pretty sure were gay for not, like, helping me. But, then, you know, like, they couldn't back then.
Did you have anyone to talk to at the time, or did you have to hide it?
No, that's the thing, is you hide it. You hide it so... I guess I was good at hiding it. So, like, that's... So, like, the fact that you're saying, like, I didn't know, it's like... Well, unfortunately, like, no one knew my entire life.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the sadness of it.
Does it feel, does it feel weird to just be like, well, this is it now? Like, does it feel weird to talk about it, or is it, it's got to be a relief?
It's all weird. Everything's weird. This is weird. Like, this is so weird. But it's like, I think, at this point, I feel like I'm just kind of on autopilot. I know that certain things I do are, like, a performance of gender. Like, this is what's going to get me called... she when I walk into a restaurant, right? Like, that's what this does. This isn't, you know, these aren't innate things that I'm innately feeling. This is just like, there's a certain amount of performance, but overall, like, it's all coming together to fulfill whatever that hole was, so that I'm not depressed anymore. Because that's the thing that I wish more people would have noticed, is just that how depressed I was, and how I weighed 300 pounds because I was shame eating and shameful and like,
hear that.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to tell us? How are we going to get that gut off of you? What are you?
Oh, that explains the beard.
That's exactly what's going on.
The literal and figurative beard.
Well, it's one of the things that we talked about in the email is, well, because I said, my ex Janet Varney's cousin, Julian, went through the reverse transition, went from Julie to Julian. And then he came on her podcast to talk about it. And I said, you know, he had a really rough time and he had a back and forth. You know, there was like there were drugs, and you said very, very common.
Oh, yeah. You're self-medicating because you have this pain, you know. It's simple. It's like such a simple thing. It's like, I have to point out that I have no answers. So I'm like,
you don't have to have any answers.
And I think that that's like part of the problem is like, I, for a long time, I would like read all this like gender, not, you know, like there is no gender radical feminism or gender queer theory. Or I like tried to just be like a gay guy, you know, like I tried so many things to not do this that, and I found nothing, you know, there's like nothing that was helpful. Like the only thing that was helpful is like doing this and having people call me a certain thing and treat me a certain way and me feeling that and being able to look in the mirror and, you know, going on hormones and like my body's changing and then like being more comfortable with my own skin.
And is that happening?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. But it's been pretty incredible to, you know, follow you on Instagram. And I didn't know anyone could type that much. I didn't know you were allowed to type that much. And
I abuse Instagram. I'm expecting to lose people, but
it's great. It's you know, you hashtag everything with transparency, which I thought was so clever.
And I think I think that the idea of transparency was just like, because it's a transition, and because I wish I could just go into hiding. Never talk to you guys. I wish I could have declined. No, of course I could have declined this. But like, I wish that I could have gone into hiding and 2 years later come out of a cocoon, a butterfly or whatever. That's a terrible analogy because it seems sexist. But like, you can't. And so, and because I run a studio and because I want the studio to succeed and I have 20 employees that
depend,
collect salaries and stuff like that, I can't just like hide. So it was like trying to find the... Like, trying to not hide made me probably way too transparent and saying way too much stuff. And I started hearing things from people where it was like, oh, Shadi's being a little, that's a little too much. There's a little too much going on.
But I think if there's any community, I mean, like, the fact that you run basically a studio of artists, like, how fucked up if you worked at, like, you know... like a bank or just like some really sort of rigid structure. But I mean, like, people work for your artists, they're probably like, great, you know, like they're probably all super cool.
They are. And like, you guys know Julia Vickerman, like she's just like, she moves 8 times faster than I was. So she's just like, you have to wear a dress at the Channies. We all are.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I never have. I don't want, like, this is so uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
And so, but she's just like, this is what we're going to do. You know, this is like, she's just grabbing me by the hand.
She's very good at that.
Saying like, you're going to have fun with this. So, So yeah, I was around a community of people that were really great, and they're all they're artists, but they're also like in their 20s, and so they're just like, we've seen this before. Like I went to college, like they knew it, and that's hugely different from my own experience because I never knew any trans people. I still don't really. Like yeah. I never knew that stuff. And then when I tried to transition when I was around 20, and I moved to North Carolina to do it, which was really insane, but I didn't know. I just wanted to get as far away from anything I knew as possible. And it was so seedy and so dark and so nasty. And it was just like drugs and AIDS fear, you know, back 20 years ago. And so like, or less than that. But that I just thought of it as seedy and dark and something I just never wanted to see again. And then I come to Los Angeles and it's much brighter and okay and everything. And so it's, you know, it's pretty nice.
Is North Carolina, was that the story about the artist, guy that like
are you trying to make me cry?
No, I'm sorry, I don't know.
No,
you posted it. I wasn't sure if that was it.
I Instagram should make it easier to delete all my
I'm sorry, I just,
no, it's so hard to get through that stuff and delete it though. I've been trying to, because it's like I was in the moment of that, I was just like vomiting all of I mean, Dustin, the Fair Audio producer, is like, we have a show called Vomit on the Web, and you're vomiting on the web. You're just like doing way too much. But I think that was just, I felt incredibly lonely, and it was a way to get some kind of reaction from people and test it out. It's easier to type things before you say
or
present it. And it's easier to take a picture of you like awkwardly trying to look a certain way and post it from the, you know, perfect angle than it is to like walk down the street. So the internet was really helpful for me. But yeah, I mean, it was a dark and seedy thing, and I ended up, I ended up, you know, like dating old men for money and clothes and things. And one of them took me into the woods and hurt me. And that, you know, there's like a more of a story that's...
I don't remember that part. I'm sorry. I think I remembered like, it's like, and he was kind of a weirdo. So I took out of town. Like,
I had to get out of town because I felt,
So a lot of people in your position probably get preyed on by...
Yeah. And I think that's changing as well. I mean, the whole world is changing so much, but it's like, if you are a person who thinks that trans bodies are beautiful for whatever reason, and I'm not trying to be too judgmental, but like that was shameful, you know? So you're in the shameful position where the only place you can kind of express yourself is in like nightclubs,
right?
You know, in districts. And then you have these other people that are like hiding from their wives and going down to the nightclub and district. Now, like there's a podcaster, Bailey J, who's like a porn star, like a transgender porn star. And she was talking about how like, the older fans of her, she's tons of fans, but the older fans will say like, you know, if she ever sees them in a restaurant, they'll like make some kind of like weird remark, or you'll kind of know, or they'll stare. But the younger fans will just be like, Bailey, hey, like, I love you. I love your stuff. Like there's just a huge difference in the amount of shame between somebody who like is interested in whatever that means, like being attracted to a trans person's, you know, in her case, like, pre-operative body versus not. And so like, you know, everything's changing and it's safer all around. And if you go to a gay bar now, it's not in the basement necessarily. There might be open windows that people can see in and stuff.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, like most people would not counter trans people in daily life, like most people just like go about their jobs or whatever. They don't go to these places. They don't see, and so their experience with trans people are so like, I had an office that was over on just east of Highland and Santa Monica Boulevard, and so there's a lot of trans prostitution right there, like and like really. It's like a bummer. Like, you know, you see them and there's like limping and ripped clothes and they just look like kind of beaten up. Like it really is sort of a...
The job you can get. You know, that's a symptom of society and how shitty it is. If you want to be... Are we allowed to swear?
Whatever you want.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
How terrible it is, especially like... And here's the thing too. Like I'm talking about being trans and this is definitely my experience, but like for a trans woman of color, it's a completely different experience. It's not going to be the same as me who, you know... who has their own studio. I have health insurance. I have really good access to like medical care and information. And So I have it a lot easier. But, like, you know, these girls are like, that's, and I wasn't exactly that when I was 20 because I was able to get out of there. But if you want to go on hormone therapy, it's illegal, and you get it by hopefully like a doctor being interested in you. Or,
oh wow,
you
know, oh, shit,
like, yeah. And so like that guy that that we were kind of talking to, that I'm being a little bit vague about, but like his, you know, these guys would like promise all this stuff. So it's like, oh, you're an artist, like, I'll get you an art studio and you can be there. And it's like, you know, they would give you like apartments and stuff and keep you if they could have the keys, you know, if they could come over anytime and do whatever.
So they're just creepy, wealthy older men.
Yeah, it's just like, this is...
Yeah. But, there, you know, there's like, you know, across the board, there's people like that. There's, you know, there's
always creepy, wealthy older men.
Yeah, but but also like, you know, there are women that do that to like young, like, you know, teenage boys too.
Yeah, it's probably...
I mean, that's like,
it's probably more awesome.
I think, but sex work is another stereotype, and it's just a symptom of this being so, such a, you know, of us not accepting that trans is like an okay thing. And
yeah,
I really wanted to, we had the Wachowskis on, and I really wanted to talk to Lana about it a little bit, but they were really, the Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer were really there to talk about Cloud Atlas.
And I'm here to talk about
Cloud Atlas.
And let me tell you, that helped so much.
Time
so,
pilot.
And so it was.
And you just cannot, I wish I had my brother.
Do you think if they had it to do all over again, they'd bother? Because that movie bombed.
It didn't do well, but which is unfortunate because I enjoyed it. But I really wanted to talk to Lana about it because, you know, like, such a public figure to be so open about it and talk about it and say, like, you know what, this is okay. That had to have some kind of impact on society.
It does. I think, I don't know.
No.
I'll have to check with society. I think that, like, it definitely helps trans people.
But,
you know,
but did that
people.
Help? Did that help you in any way?
Not Lana Wachowski specifically. I had met Lana like 7 years ago and knew and just saw speculation and thought she was always going to be secretive about it because they're kind of private people anyway. Mm-hmm. So by the time she like came out in that Cloud Atlas, you know, kind of more came out in that Cloud Atlas video, I'd already been far enough along that it didn't affect me, but other people did. Like, and Chaz Bono, I think, was another good example of like a celebrity, you know, on Dancing with the Stars, like going from becoming Chaz Bono. Like, I know, like, I think that made it easier for my grandmother, because she watches Dancing with the Stars, to accept me because of Chaz Bono sort of paving that way.
Wow. Oh.
And my mom brought up Chaz Bono a bunch of times too. So like,
well, because I think even of the older people in the Chaz Bono situation, they remember Chastity Bono, the little girl on the TV.
That's cool, but sad at the same time, where it's like someone has to see someone on television and go, oh, I guess I can accept my grandchild now. Like, are
well,
you
it's
fucking...
just like, it's just, it's baby steps.
They may have without, you know, that. But, you, well, look at what the other, this is media saying, like, this is okay, these are normal people. Because what it's always been before is, like, what I grew up with was Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
And it's like a trans person makes a skin suit out of regular, right, you know, out of, like, a genetic. So it's like, it was just so messed up. And every single, it was always in comedy. It was always played for, like, you know, somebody would go into a bathroom and there'd be a woman standing up peeing in a urinal.
Yeah.
And it was always, like, a murderer.
Or Mrs. Doubtfire.
Or a victim. Yeah, I never connected Mrs. Doubtfire because that wasn't
about sexuality. That was just about him trying to...
It was just the best way possible that he could figure that he could see his kids.
Yes.
Instead, I don't think Mrs. Doubtfire was a joke.
What?
I don't think Mrs. Doubtfire was a joke.
It was a serious movie.
the most appropriate documentary on trans. But there are... If you want to know my story, rent Mrs. Doubtfire. Fox News just got like a lot of crap from the trans community because they used that. There was some trans medical article. Yeah, and they used Fox News said, like, well, you know, transgender rights and I don't remember exactly what the article was, but it showed Mrs. Doubtfire in that scene where it's like hot flashes, like putting up.
Oh my God.
Her boobs.
Then they showed Tootsie.
Yeah. Yeah, there are other trans.
I know it's a dumb question to ask, but like, why? What the fuck is wrong with people? Like, why is it so hard for people to? This is just a dumb question because it's just the fucking way people are. But why is it so hard for people to go, hey, if this is who you are and this makes you live a happier life, like, why isn't that the focus? I just don't, it's so hard for me to understand the point of view.
Well, for Christians, there's a line. They have a line in their book. There's a Leviticus, you know, just as much as, like, thou shalt not sleep with a man. There's something about, like, thou shalt not wear the clothing of opposite sex or something like that. Like, so they have, like, roots in it.
They love that book.
They love that book. They go by that.
And I'm sure it's not all Christians too, but a lot of people have various reasons, and I don't know.
The people that are actually the most, like, online anyway, are sort of this group of radical feminists are the ones that are the most sort of vile towards trans people. They're the ones that take our pictures and then put it up on, like, hate sites and, like,
why?
Because they believe that, like, the oppression of women is caused by, you know, this thing by men in this thing called the patriarchy, and the patriarchy uses gender to control and oppress women. So, like, wearing high heels, which I don't do, but, like, it, you know, is a way to hobble a woman or something. And gender is just this incredibly oppressive thing, and it's completely a social construct used to oppress women. And so if somebody's saying they're transgender, and especially trans women who are, like, males from a privileged class saying that they want to be trans women, it's to them, it looks the same as, like, a white person saying they want to be black and changing,
oh,
you know, and dyeing their skin and,
oh my God,
doing that. Like, it's incredibly sexist, right? And they're not wrong. Like it is, like, there is elements of, a lot of elements of what I'm doing as being somewhat sexist in a way. I think their foundation is wrong. I think that gender does have innate qualities, or certain aspects of gender and sexual identity, I think, is an innate thing, because if it wasn't, I think I could have beaten it.
Do you feel like it's something that you had to beat, or do you feel like it's, oh, this is who I am, and this is me being what I always felt I was?
I'm 38 and I just transitioned. It was a lot of beating. You know, it was a lot of, like, I can't do this. This is going to ruin my life. This is going to destroy my company. This is going to make me unlovable in the world. You know, like, so yeah, I tried to beat it.
And that didn't happen.
Forever.
And that's not happening.
Because it doesn't happen. Like, you can fight it until you can, you know, I don't know what it takes. I don't know, everybody goes through that stuff. The friends that, I don't really have any trans friends, but the friends that I've sort of gained the most insight from and the people that I think have the most sort of parallel life are my two sober friends. So Susan Burke and Dave Schroeder, like, are sober. And when we talk, they're so insightful about, like, their life change from going from an alcoholic to a sober person.
You mean Susan the comic?
Yeah.
And the screenwriter.
Yeah, she wrote Smash, which is about alcoholic. So, and she's been so helpful, and she's so insightful because she understands, like, life change and, you know, things that I didn't understand about alcoholism, like how much a part of identity it was and social identity and stuff. And so, like, she's so insightful. And then, like, there are people that on Twitter will say, like, oh, I see a lot of parallels between you and my gastro bypass surgery. Mm-hmm. I lost 200 pounds. And when I read stories about trans people, I see this, like, just such common pain and all this stuff.
Because so, I guess it's so much of it has to do with identity, I suppose, yeah. or at least trying to, you know, like I think you said, like, fill the hole or deal with depression or, you know, so whether it's, I have to drink 20 beers a day, or I have to do this, or I have to do drugs, or I have to, like, it's just not being comfortable, I guess. Ultimately, I guess it's not being comfortable with who you are.
Yeah. And the authenticity that comes when you beat those things or when you daily try to figure out, like, that's the thing too. I think, like, a sober person, it's like, for me, it's like one day at a time. I think about I have a bad day and I'm like, I shouldn't do this. This is like, I need to undo this, you know, like, what am I thinking? Like, that happens to me all the time, or this is too hard, or this is going to be too messed up. So, I think living an authentic life or going through a big change to live a more authentic life, that's true to, like, some abstract concept. If it was easy, if you knew what being a sober person, if that was easier, you knew that being thin would truly make you happy, and it was easy. I've lost 53 pounds and I'm trying to lose about 40 more pounds. So I guess I'm kind of going through that too. But my shame around eating was completely around this body image issue that I have. Gosh, I'm going all over the place.
It's good though.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, so there are these parallels, I think, for anybody that just doesn't feel like they're being true and are trying to find some truth in themselves and
yeah.
hopefully do. And I think that my sober friends are much happier and they talk. It's funny because she'll be like, oh, you know what you're doing? You're doing this, like, we call it the pink cloud. And it's like, oh, I am in the pink cloud. Like, which is terrible because for, like, if you're a trans woman, it's like the pink cloud sounds like a really sexist thing, but it's like, yeah, you transition and everything's going to be great. And of course it's not great. Like now I have to deal with all my real problems.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that you, I assume everyone probably lives this way, or most people live this way. It's the sort of, the if I only monologue of like, well, if I only had this, yeah. then that would make everything better. You know, rather than kind of dealing with where you are in the present, but if I only had this one thing, and then you get that one thing and it's like, fuck, I still have the same problems. And I think that happens to a lot of people who quit drinking, where they go, oh, if I could just quit drinking, everything would be fine. And they're like, why is everything not fine? I quit drinking. Like, no, that was a symptom of shit that you have to deal with. Now you've gotten that out of the way. Now you can actually start to deal with it.
Yeah. I go to therapy 5 days a week and have for about 3.5 years. And I did find myself, when I would have a problem, go to, if I just would have been born a girl, I would have had a chance. Like, if I just would have been, or actually, like, for me, it was always more challenging than that, because if Morpheus came with the blue pill and the red pill and said, like, red pill, you can be happy as a heterosexual male, or blue pill, you could be, reborn as female, I would have taken either pill. Like, for me, it was like either one.
Just want to be happy.
If I could just be one of these things, I don't think happiness is right, because it's like, I just want to be simple. Like, I just wanted to live more simply. And it was always such a huge distraction too, that I'd be thinking about gender and looking at other people, or thinking about my height, or thinking about my, like, comparing myself to other people in this, like, gendered way, when other people are just, like, working on something. You know, it was just like, there's just a lot of distractions around that stuff. But I did conflate it with all of my other problems. And it'd be like when I'd, if the studio was doing poorly 1 month or something like that, I would get that depression would lead into this bigger undercurrent of depression. So,
yeah.
So now I do have to, now I'm not depressed about the gender thing. Like, I've come to terms with, it's not that I'm like, I've transitioned into a woman or something, and it's as if I was born that way, but I found this thing called trans that I'm pretty comfortable in. I feel like I can express myself however I want to express myself, which I think is really important. And I'm just getting treated more the way that I thought I should. And I'm interacting with people like I always thought I should interact with people. And I have those expectations. And like, and if I, and I'm date, and when I'm dating, it's like, it's more, it's a dynamic that I get and like, it's not, like, when I used to date gay guys, I would be out with them, and it'd be like, man, this guy, like, there were a couple big comics and stuff, it'd be like, oh, this guy's so great, he's so funny, and he's really smart, and I just wish he wasn't so gay. like was just, that was always my takeaway.
That's really fascinating.
He's just so gay, so, like, which, whatever, but it is... so now it's like the dynamic is more what I think it should be.
Okay, got it.
My own, and because you've said sexuality a few times, it's like there's a big distinction between my sexuality, because some people transition and are lesbians or bisexual or asexual or whatever. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're. But I always have been attracted to men, and so like, my sexuality and my gender identity are like, it's hard to be attracted to men when you're born male, because that's one thing. And then it's hard to have this gender identity too. And then you have this gender presentation component too. Cause my gender identity hasn't changed. I've always thought of myself as like if there was a choice between home ec and shop.
So your exterior is just representing your interior.
There's all these like complicated pieces
Now you're consistent all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on it. I'm transitioning.
You're transitioning. So, I would see you at parties like at Comic-Con and stuff. And so what, before you started making the transition, what kind of was going through your mind when you would walk into a party and then it's like mega social thing?
Much damage. So in therapy, I don't want to be really shrinky about it, but like my therapist explained it as, I just compartmentalized, and she treats me for basically like PTSD because I also had a pretty abusive father who would always call me a crybaby and a sissy, and he was a military guy. And if I ever, like, I was the kid, the 7-year-old wearing like shiny parachute pants because they, you know, like where in Michigan wearing
because
Michael
they
Jackson
were cool.
Wore. Yeah, but no one else did it.
I wore them in Memphis.
So it was like I had 40 pair in seventh grade. So like it was crazy and like kind of flamboyant and stuff, and it just that got beaten down big time. And so it's like with the PTSD, so what I would do is I would basically like in a social situation become just manic. And I think that people that have been to parties with me saw that. I would get drunk. Like first of all, I would drink before going to the party and then be manic at the party and then go home and pass out. So that's my social thing. So like it's this kind of life of the party vibe that I had going.
It really is like a party environment is such an interesting environment because you can kind of walk in and be like, oh, everyone's here just hanging out. And what can be going on inside someone are just fucking thunderstorms raging inside of just trying to figure out how you fit in and feeling isolated in a crowded room of people. And no, I don't understand anyone here.
Yeah, and then of course, like the last Comic Con party I saw you at, it was, you know, kind of a Hollywoody party, and there were a lot of celebrities there. And so it's just, I'm looking for anything. Like, if I talk to the person from Glee, like, is that going to make me feel better about myself? If I just like, you're just so you're not talking to anybody, you're not connecting with anybody. It's just raging. You know, it's just this manic.
And space. You probably have difficulty connecting with people when you're not true to who you are.
Impossible,
because you're not representing your side.
And I don't want you to know, I don't want you to figure out. I'm like, my thing was just quips, right? Like if I was ever in a social situation, I was either zoned out, hiding in the corner, or like cracking stupid jokes. Like that was, you know, or insulting somebody. Like it was never like connection on a personal level. It was never like, how do you feel? And that leads to like which, you know, at a party, it's not maybe the appropriate place for that anyway.
Right.
But even just as a group of like 4 or 5 people, it was never good.
And now do you?
Now it's really intimate. It's probably too intimate because I think being, because I'm trans and because I'm doing this stuff and because I've been so like transparent online, I think now people are more willing to talk about their own things.
Yeah.
And so I get into a lot of really intimate conversations. And now when I go to a party, somebody will pull me aside and we'll sit down and we'll just talk about something for an hour, which is great. You know, it's like, it's better.
Because you still quip, though. You still quip.
I'll quip. I'm quipping right now.
Well, no, because there's probably that whole layer of like effort that you don't have, that you don't have to expend any energy now on what if they find out. Like, there's none of that.
Yeah, it's not, there's no, I'm not looking for any of the things that I thought I was
looking
for.
So what's the process from the time you decided, like, this is what I'm going to do, as much as you're comfortable about talking about, but, you know, what's the medical process for how, like, what you have to go through and how long and all that stuff?
I'm not going to go into all of it because I think it's important because for trans people, like, it has been so hung up on, like, genitals and that sort of stuff for so long, but it's not about that. So I don't want to get into like a lot of that stuff, but like, but in general, about 2 years ago in therapy, my therapist, one of the treatments that they'll do sometimes, because sometimes people go in with gender identity disorder, I think is what it was called, something like that. The diagnosis of it, but some people have like borderline personality disorder or dissociative identity disorder, or they're like a fetishist, like, because that exists. Like, there are cross-dressers that just like to like put on a pair of, like, I never cross-dressed. That freaked me
out.
Like,
there are straight men who just cross-dress.
Yeah, you cross-dress because it makes you, I don't know why.
Eddie Izzard cross-dresses.
Yeah, I don't know, but oh boy, he's even, like, is he doing that? I don't know if he's doing that for a sexual reason, but some people want to, like, get dressed up because they're attracted to themselves or something. There's, like, a million different reasons for people to mess around with gender. And so one of the ways that they sort of test it is they give you, like, a low dose of testosterone blocker to kind of see if that, because it lowers your sex drive. And so when your sex drive is lowered, you still feel like the same about it because you're not, if it's not a sexual.
So you're trying to see if it's a fetish or not.
Yeah. I don't know if they're just saying like, we're going to see this, but you test, you just like, it's a little like, let's see how does this make you feel better? And it's like, oh my gosh, yes, this is great. And then And then it's just sort of more and more. So when I got into like, so they give you estrogen. So I inject estrogen once a week, and then they give you this like testosterone blocker, which you have to have. And then your body just starts changing. I mean, I don't know, like you grow boobs and then you your skin gets softer and, you know, the fat distribution changes and your face changes a little bit. And there's stuff that like people, you regrow hair, which is cool. Like if you have like, if you're bald, like you'll start regrowing some of the hair that you lost. So if any of you guys start balding, estrogen man.
I'm listening.
Yeah. Also heard prostate medicine is a good way to grow hair.
Yeah, because it's a similar, it's usually like a androgen blocker. So it shrinks your prostate and it'll.
That's where Propecia is.
Yeah, Propecia.
Yeah.
That's where, but Propecia can ruin you sexually. For the rest of your life.
Also, if it's a cracked pill,
don't touch it if you're pregnant.
Yeah, like they're just like
don't even look at it.
Yeah. Women in general, like it's like just like don't even fucking get near it because it's just it's like it will just seep in and fuck some shit up.
Yeah, it's you're messing around with hormones, which a lot of people have a problem with, but like your body's messing around with hormones all the time. Like when I first got tested for my hormone levels, like they were abnormally low, and I didn't know that. And then I start reading about hormones, and it's like men in prison tend to have very high hormones. It's like these sex hormones control so much of like your personality and obviously sex drive and stuff like that. It's pretty crazy. So I think then I started taking hormones and my body changed and that made me feel good. And I remember waking up. I feel like I have to be careful here because I know that trans people will listen to this and they always were really critical of other people because it's like, don't say that because then they'll just think it's about boobs or something. But like when I first sort of felt the weight of breast growing, one morning when I was like, you know, half asleep, kind of waking up and I was laying on my side and I just felt connected to my body, you know, and it was just like, oh my God, like this is, I smiled and then fell back asleep. It was just like, I'm connected. And then I, like my dreams, I always used to dream that I was like sort of a random amorphous female thing, or I would dream that it was from my perspective. Like I never dreamt as myself, and then I started to, and it was just like, oh, this is how probably most, like we're called trans people, we call you cisgendered people, so cis, which you probably haven't used, but this is how cis people dream. They're in it.
Oh wow.
Like, you know, like that kind of stuff. So and these experiences are my experiences, like you know, I've been on message boards for 20 years and stuff, and it's, people have a lot of different experiences for how they experience their like dysphoria and what they need to do. But for me, it was like that kind of stuff. And so when I started dreaming, I started seeing myself, I would wake up so happy. It's like, oh, that's what I'm like, my body is creating, my brain has, you know, like an amputee who still feels their arm is like, my body is starting to map me now correctly. Like it's, I'm unamputating myself or something.
Wow.
Which is, yeah. So that's exciting. I just feel, you know, integrated and connected.
How's it, the positivity in your life during the transition, like, helped your work or your creative, ideas or...
Or did it hamper it in the sense that if you're more content... Are you less driven to, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, is, you know, sometimes performing can be like, I'm going to go out of my mind. I think I just need to go distract myself.
It totally did. And that was unfortunate because part of the compartmentalization I had was work. Like if I got the reason why Puny, like I was able to do, we were able to do the LA stuff from Minneapolis and grow. And we grew quickly. Like the first year we went from 0 to 22 people. The reason that happened is because I worked constantly to not have to socialize or think about this stuff, right?
Right.
So now it's like, no, I want to date. I want to hang out with people. I don't want to work all the time. And it's, so it's like a, you know, maybe not great for the company, but I think it's making me now do things that normal people have to do, which is like work-life balance or something.
Yeah. Is dating challenging from the standpoint of, you know, as you're going through this transition and as you're probably learning more stuff, like, you know, it's you're still figuring a lot of stuff out. So how is dating in that process?
It's terrible. Yeah, it's terrible because you don't, you know, it's funny because like all my like girlfriends will say like, oh, you're good, you look good, or your photos are good, or whatever, you're a great person, and you're all this stuff, like you're real catchy. And it's like, oh, cool, introduce me to anybody you know who would go out with me. And then they're like, ugh, you know, like,
you're so good.
Yeah, and immediately it's like, it's a small pool, a tear duct of dating pool. But there are, you know, there are people that like, you know, like maybe they started dating a woman and didn't know that she was trans because she's like, this is an actual story of a person. So hi, this person, if you're out there, he started to date a woman who transitioned at 16. So she didn't go through like a testosterone, like a masculinizing puberty, which is what you see when you see my like broad shoulders and tall body. It's just like, it's hormones during puberty did this to me. And hormones, if I had proper medical treatment and could, it was safe to come out, like the kind of trans person that I am will probably like pretty much cease to exist. It already is ceasing to exist because the world's so much more comfortable around it. They're in schools, there's like gay straight alliance stuff. Like if there's a kid that's showing any kind of gender nonconformity, like people ask and they wonder and there's places they can go. And so they get put on puberty blockers and then they get the normal puberty that matches their gender identity, and you will never know, you know, you won't know. So, and that doesn't mean there won't be trans people in the future, because it's still an identity and it's still like a cultural, there's still a culture to it. It's still part of you, no matter whether people know that you're trans or not, you still are trans and you might
identify. But I'm curious about that. Is the goal at some point for people to not know, or is it better that they know and they love you and accept you no matter what?
I think that's individual, based on individuals. I think it's a better society that, where you don't have to hide it, where they know and they love you and accept you, and it doesn't mean that you're less of a something or you don't get to be what you want to be because you are this thing. I think that's the better way to go. But in the past, it was definitely like, they call it passing. You wanted to pass, and you wanted, and they call it stealth. You wanted to go stealth.
Oh.
That was like the whole thing, is going stealth. And a lot of people did. And then there's one of the big trans activists right now, Janet Mock, was stealth. She worked at People. And she was an editor at people.com, I think. No one knew. Has a really good-looking boyfriend. Very, like, typical gender-normative life. And then just decided, with all the political stuff that happened, I guess. I haven't talked to her about this. But, like, that she was going to tell people she was trans. And so she got up, she told people she was trans, and then started to help other trans people from her position as, like, somebody who worked at People.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think people, that used to be all about going stealth, and now it's like, it's more about that honesty, because I don't think anybody wants to say like, oh yeah, I remember that when I was a kid, like when I was a little girl, go, you know, like you have to make up this whole backstory.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's going to be a certain level of dishonesty if you're stealth. It's cooler to live in a world where you can be like, when I was a little boy,
yeah,
like, that was my experience.
Because you
it
shouldn't
was
be
typical. It wasn't.
You shouldn't be ashamed of, you know, when you used to be a man or a boy, right? Like, yeah. It's like, is that a thing that maybe comes up? It's like I was kind of ashamed of like being a man or being a woman.
I think if I wasn't as big, well, you're ashamed of certain choices you make, and you're ashamed of not living authentically. And I get ashamed sometimes. I have a lot less shame, but I'm ashamed sometimes of not being courageous. I'm ashamed at people I dated. Like, I dated some women that I just kind of led. Like, I told them right away what I was, like, they knew, but I still like got into relationships I shouldn't have. Like beards.
Yeah.
I know about beards. I know about beards too. So there was. You know, there's shame about that stuff. And then if you're like me, like if you're like Janet Mock or somebody that's 16, you might want to hide that stuff a lot more. But for me, it's like, people know. Like, I'm never going to be somebody, I'm 5'11", you know, I'm never going to be somebody that people are like, oh, you know, people are going to wonder and guess about it. So like, I almost feel fortunate in that sometimes, because I get this like life continuity. Plus, I'm older and I have a life and I have a career, and like, Google will betray me no matter what. Like,
yeah.
If somebody types in my name, like,
Google's
like,
such a dick. You know who won't betray you? Bing, right, Jonah?
I think.
Can you get Bing to take off all?
I'll see what I can do.
To erase my career entirely.
But I think. I don't know. It just, it seems more empowering. I mean, like, from, you know, I don't have the point of view to say, but it, as much as I can relate to it, it seems more empowering to be like, fuck yeah, this is what I was, and I took control, and like, it just like feels like you are in control of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're kind of living and you can't be honest with anyone, you're not, it's almost like, I don't know, it feels like false control, because you can't, you unfortunately have to lie to, that's the stealth thing of like, lie to fit in, you know? And it feels like you have more control if you're like, yes, this is it. Is there a problem? No? Good. Let's fucking move on.
Yeah, it feels really good to be able to be honest and talk about things. And because I lied for so long, I mean, I constantly was making up things. I can't even, you know, well, I mean, even just being like, yeah, I was constantly lying about stuff.
I mean, it's so crazy to think that, you know, from a lot of people's point of view, they go, oh, wow, this happened all of a sudden. You're like, no. This is
that's the thing. You're saying you lived as a man. It's like, no, I mean, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't look in the mirror. Like, I didn't know, like, from my point of view, I didn't know what I looked like and what I was doing. You know, to me, it was just like the eyes. I felt like this in the invisible eyeball. You know, I'm just an observer. I'm completely detached from my body and a zombie. Was tied around to everybody's projects, as you know from The Talking Dead. I think people talk about that too. They talk about like the shared experience that men have, or the shared experience that women have. I didn't have any shared experience, because I wouldn't, if you said come to my bachelor party, I wouldn't go, you know, like I avoided. I had no guy friends. I have people that'll show up for my birthday party, but for like intimate friends, like I would just avoid everyone. So I had this very like wander, and I was homeless for a while, and I had this very like wandery existence. And I think that like starting the studio, when I think back about it, it was like, I just didn't want to work for anybody I didn't want to be around people that I wasn't distanced from, you know, like it's just, everything in my life I look back on now and put the pieces together, and it's like, yeah, I was just trying to be as isolated as possible.
I mean, I think a lot of people maybe in that situation would not have just started an animation studio. Like how do you go from being homeless to, oh, I'm actually going to at least pretend that I have my life together and start a thing? Like, that's a pretty huge undertaking.
Yeah, well, I think when I sort of got hurt in North Carolina, I just decided that I was just not going to be this way anymore. I got really transphobic and really homophobic, and I got really like, I am not ever going to indulge in any GLBT anything. Like, I was just like, I'm going to be the straightest businessman person, like whatever that there can be. And then I just started working, and all that stuff. I didn't decide to start a studio. I was freelancing, and then I got too much work, and then, you know, some friends said, well, we should combine forces. So it just, you know, happened over a long time. Like, I was 29 before I started the first one. I had a different one before, then we did comic books and stuff, but I was 29. So from like 18 to 29, I didn't go to college. I just wandered around. I wasn't doing a lot between 18 and 29.
Just trying to figure it out?
Just being living catatonically, like basically being catatonic and just working two or three jobs. And I also, this is separate, and we're introducing another issue we can focus, but I also was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis. So I got really sick with this autoimmune disorder when I was like 25. So that actually kind of helped me not deal with the trans stuff, because I went to a gender therapist when I was around 24. And I was just like, I wanted to talk to her, and I did a lot of sessions, but then it was just like, I hurt too much, and it was like all this pain of disease and dealing with disease. So that helped me focus on nothing for a long time.
And then, so what ultimately happened?
They created this biological drug that I inject, and I can live a normal life.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, holy shit.
Yeah, it's this biological, it's called Ambrel, but yeah, it's great. It
fucking changed. Science, you guys.
Yeah, science. Yeah. There's a lot of science. I'm better living through chemistry, yes. For sure. There's a lot of injections. I have a little lab.
If this were 200 years ago, Well, if this were 200 years ago, you and I would be about at the end of our life expectancy anyway. So it's like, I just figured it out and dead. You know, it's like,
exactly.
You know, you're just the upper 30s.
Probably be slave owners, which is weird.
I don't know if that's true, Matthew. I feel like I would have been a northerner.
I would have transitioned to slave.
You would have transitioned.
I'm just feeding into the.
Shady, I do want to know how an animation studio in the middle of the country got together with Yo Gabba Gabba, a show that was like, you know, developed out in on the West Coast.
Well, we saw,
because it's something I've always wanted to know and I never asked.
I saw the YouTube video because they put it up as a YouTube video because they couldn't sell that show until it got like millions of hits on YouTube, and then Nickelodeon said they wanted to license it. For us, it was I would just try a million things. I was a computer programmer. I worked on comic books for a while. I did like 40 or 50 jobs before that. I'm just like, was always jumping around. I was screen printing rock posters for shows because Minneapolis is such a big music and art community.
So yeah. That's where Flatstock started, right?
What?
In Flatstock, like it's like when everyone has the screen printed posters.
No, I can't remember where the first one was, but it was either Austin or Chicago.
Oh, okay,
but there are a lot of like Flatstock poster artists, like burlesque and aesthetic.
It's always like the coolest ones I always see are like, it's like, would just say, you know, the Triple Rock or, you know.
Well, those, because those cool venues would commission posters.
Yeah. Actually,
like, so that's what you were doing. So you were making
rock posters and like just being part of that community. My studio mate, I was doing comic book stuff, but my studio mate was Brian Ewing, and we shared a studio for a while, and he's like a kind of a bigger, like he designed the Warped Tour for years, and he's like a bigger rock poster maker now. But at the time, we had a studio, and we were just getting started on art stuff. And I decided to try to screen print, and I liked it. And then I was a member of this site called Gig Posters, and Jesse LeDoux got asked to do a Yo Gabba Gabba short and was looking for an animation studio. And some of our mutual friends just said, okay, do Jesse's short. And so we did the short, and they liked it. And then I saw that they were looking for an animator, and I just said, hey, rather than hiring like an individual animator, can you hire our studio? And Julia Vickerman was moving like that month.
So
we have a person coming out there, and she can be like the liaison to drop off files, and it'll be great. It'll be like having somebody there. And but you'll have the power of a studio back in Minneapolis. That was that was my pitch for a long time.
Nice.
More people for a better value. And they're like, okay, sure, yeah, it's good.
Oh, wow.
And
that's crazy.
So we started right away, and then we came down to that Comic-Con, and it was before the show came out, but DJ Lance Rock was there, and we did the whole Yo Gabba Gabba thing, and that was the very first time that I ever went to, like, an industry party. Or,
I think that's – is that when we met at that Comedians of Comedy
that, I think it was the year after.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I had already known Dave Rath and stuff.
Yeah, okay.
So for a full year by that party. That first Comic-Con was like, we visited the Yo Gabba Gabba offices, and one of the executive producers was like, Disney's going to have a party. And I was like, we're going to go to a Comic-Con party.
Oh, wow.
I used to do comic books and used to go to Comic-Cons back where the comic book companies put on parties. So there was like a
little smaller.
Yeah.
Like, before they became pop culture cons.
Yeah.
And they were just...
It was a Comic-Con. And
they were comics.
And so it would be like the small presses would bring.
Boy, if you haven't been to like a traditional Comic-Con... It's a whole different, it's fun, but it's a whole different experience. It's just basically like a bunch of tables, a bunch of cardboard boxes, and just stacks and stacks and stacks of comic books and artists.
At the fairgrounds.
And it's fucking awesome.
It is fucking awesome. Really, and just cool. Like, just watching people just like, you know, it's kind of Storage Wars-y, just like rifling through.
For a while, I've been trying to like assemble like the Batman run from like, you know, one day I'll start at one. Yes. Yes.
Well, I don't want fire safety.
Guys, this is really goes with my story.
What makes you think we didn't hear it the first time?
Chris, they can hear you, please.
What?
Please, Chris.
No, that's a recording.
No, it's not. That's a human being
who recorded his voice.
Guys, is this going to be a test?
He sounded old timey.
I can't tell.
Fire anyway, the disco.
Is it a test of lights or lights and sound?
It's but what's going to happen is we're going to start talking about something really heavy, and then a fucking fire horn is going to go off. It's gonna be a whoop whoop sound.
But back to those original comic things. Like, I've been trying to like assemble Batman, the run of Batman. So it's like that's gonna be great. So like it'd be like an issue that's like not valuable to anybody but me, but it's like I need issue 478
to fit the collection.
And yeah. There's that just that moment of going through the stacks.
And this guy has that
issue 478 of fucking Batman.
That's what I like about record shopping is that, like, you know, you can go and just buy a new one of that record, but it's the fun of kind of looking through the racks and just kind of that culture of just trying to find something you want.
Yeah, but it's always it's that feeling of like this is so valuable to me.
This is fucking awesome.
This is like
awesome.
A dollar, like this like thing for a dollar that's like, this is going to do it. I'm going to have 400 through 500.
Is it the search versus, because you could get it online, right? Could you get it on eBay?
Yeah, but that's not nearly as fun.
You need
that's,
to
yeah,
find
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the hunter-gatherer thing of like the finding. So we have a little bit of time left. There's a couple other things that I want to ask you about. Number one is the use of the word tranny. Because I, you know, I remember...
Like on my Jeep and my tranny's going, I'm like, fuck, I gotta...
Yes, exactly. Really no.
Okay,
no.
Solved.
Because I think it's an interesting topic because I think most people don't really think twice about it. No. And, you know, I certainly... I remember I said it once on Attack of the Show. I was like, blah, 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 tranny something. And someone wrote... I got really angry tweets and I was like, why is this person so upset? I really didn't understand. And it wasn't until...
Doesn't sound like a good word.
And it wasn't until that I kind of... dove a little further. I was like, this is a really disparaging word, and it's not because anyway, I want to
keep saying it though.
No,
we say the T word. No, it's yeah. I think the best thing that I heard was that's the word that people hear before they're murdered, and that's like, okay, I'll stop saying it.
Yeah,
because I was saying it self-deprecating, like, oh, you know, just me being like just a tall, messed up, you know, goofy tranny, you know.
Yeah.
And then it was like, whoa, you know, you have to think about what that means. So it is like it's our N word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people don't think about it, but it, you know, it's more than that because like. Did you hear about an altercation I got into with somebody online for saying transsexual?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So like people casually toss around like, you know, let's say if there's a tweet that's like, you know, dirtier than a transsexual hooker or something. Well, that's not even how I don't even remember how the exact same thing went. But like, there are people that are in LA who I know are like. Awesome, liberal, sweet to me people, but we'll say like throw transsexual in as like an adjective meaning less than or worse than or gross or that
or weird
know? Or weird or like it's bad and then or like another like so this there's this other woman who's like a friend of mine who wrote she put on a lot of makeup one day and she wrote tranny face and it was like I know what she was saying sort of but like it just perpetuates that idea that it's If you wear too much makeup or you look too bad or you look, you know, or you don't look good or you're not put together, that's
well, basically
that's
just what said, it basically just says to you or anyone else who's in the community, it basically just says like, this is wrong or this is weird. I mean, it's like the same way that somebody like, oh, the fucking Hawaiians or, oh, check out those black people. Like it's
it's microaggressions that build up. And when you wake up, there were a couple times on Instagram where somebody just said that and I couldn't get out of bed. I was like, here, I feel safe. I'm trying to feel safe. And these are people that I'm like connecting with. And it's just, and they're not thinking about me. I know they're not. And they're not trying to hurt me at all. But it's just this like, it's just these microaggressions.
Well, it's a weird stratum of society where it's just sort of like acceptable to go like, oh yeah, of all the things that's okay to say is weird, that's a thing that's okay.
Yeah.
Without really thinking, you know, oh, you know, maybe someone's been struggling for 20 years and that's who they are and you're kind of attacking them.
It's definitely frustrating in comedy, like, you know, you don't want to be on stage and say something and get attacked by the internet or something like that. I think I'm not humorless about that stuff, and I don't want to word police everybody. And it's like, it's getting to where we can't say anything, right? Like, I just want to say retarded tranny once. Just to describe me not, you know, getting a parking ticket, you know? So, no, but you don't, but so I think it's just consider it. And I think that just is going to make you like slightly more considerate as a person. I'm not, a lot of people are really, get really upset about it. And I think I'm 7 weeks in, so I'm so much more mature. But for like the first 3 or 4 weeks, I definitely was like, please don't say that. Like, I'm begging you to just like, just give me a break because we are just so used to just like negative stuff all the time. It's just always ugly and always funny and always played for laughs. And then, but one of the things I loved about LA is I think that I'm not a comedian and I don't have a lot of theories about it, but I have noticed that like a lot of the comics that I like are really trying to figure out how to do stuff that doesn't insult anyone, that, and Will Weldon, do you guys know?
Yeah, Will Weldon's a great comedian.
So do you know his bit about trans people in the movies? He does this bit where he talks about how like it's always the same. Some guy has sex with a trans woman or is thinking about it and then ends up barfing for 20 minutes. Oh, yeah, yeah. So he has this whole bit about it, and I saw it at one of the festivals. So there's a big crowd at the Downtown Independent, and Will's telling this joke, and then the punchline, I'm just going to ruin people's bits from for the rest of the show, was something like, you know, this is, I'm not a comedian, I just have to say, it's just becoming apparent, was like, you know, nobody should be bothered by sleeping with a woman who used to be a man. You're all sleeping with women who used to be children, and it doesn't make you a pedophile. And like, it was like, that was like the thing. And then, and the whole crowd at the Downtown erupted and like clapped. And I had never felt, I've been to like trans conferences, like 2-3 day conferences where it's empowering and all this stuff. But I've never felt so like this, spiritual is not the right word, but this just like communal, welcoming environment than I did in a comedy club with Will Weldon up there saying that joke and having everybody go like, right on, brother.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there crying and like, this is okay. Like the world is changing and this is okay. And he told that joke instead of throwing out tranny as a funny way to, you know.
Yeah. He's a very brilliantly smart comic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Incredibly nice.
But I see that happening more and more, but it's not, you know, even in the mainstream stuff, there's not really that happening, and there's always articles coming out and people use it in a really derogatory way, but it's getting better, and that's, society's made it safe for me to do this. I don't have a particular amount of courage. I wasn't able to do, I tried it and failed and, you know, ran away with my tail between my legs, and now society's changing enough that I was like, all right, I'm safe enough to do this.
Well, there's an I think with comedy in particular, because you know, I when I first started doing the Chelsea show, I would leave feeling really bad because I would just say these really horrible things about people that I didn't know. And I just kind of felt like I was selling myself out. It was like, I don't necessarily believe these things. I'm just shitting on people I don't know to try to get a laugh. And I kind of felt whorish about it. And Whitney Cummings actually gave me fucking awesome advice. She goes, when I started to feel that way, I would just make the jokes about myself.
Yeah.
I would make it about me. Because then that takes the other person, oh, well, that's like how I blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, fuck, that's a really... And so I've noticed that that's kind of happened with stand-up lately, is that... And it actually is... I feel like it's what I should be doing, which is writing more and more personal stuff about me. And here's why I'm broken, or here's why I'm fucked up, or here's this weird thing that happened. I mean, that sort of just keeps everyone, it almost, you know, it kind of keeps everyone else at it. So I'm not going, hey, those fucking people over there, or that thing over there. It's all like, this was my experience, this is what it seemed like to me, and this is how I dealt with it, and this is like it, which is great, because then I'm not, you know, I don't think comedy has to necessarily, I don't think comedy has to be attacky.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Make fun of yourself. Attack yourself.
Attack yourself all you want.
If I had to attack myself for 20 years, you can attack yourself for 50 minutes.
Well, me telling a story about how I fucked a blow-up doll once is a little bit different than, you know, like really, you know, like...
We'll be right back.
All right. Wait, no, I want to tell the story now. But
yeah, don't make fun of blow-up dolls. Make it about yourself, because they get so much shit.
Oh, you mean plasties?
Yeah, they don't.
Oh, what?
Whoa. Really, that's the last thing they hear.
What?
fuck. Swish.
So what's... That is amazing. You're not a comic. Get out of here. So what is the... So what's next? Like, what is the next, you know, like... What are... Do you have milestones? Like, oh, and this will be a this? Or is it just... It's just a process.
We're asking her, like, what's next? What are you guys animating next? Like,
which one of my things are...
Go see movie 43 in theaters now. We did a masturbating cat on screen. No, that... That's true. But... I had a spreadsheet. So I moved to Los Angeles in September. I haven't been here that long. And I had a spreadsheet of, like, my transition timeline down to, like... this is when I'm going to get, like, these are my laser hair removal. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's something you have to do too to get. I had barely any facial hair, but, you know, you have to get it taken off usually. And then every little thing, like, I'm going to get a makeover this day, like, for the next year. And I blew that in a day. Like, I was bummed out on a Saturday.
Gonna have lunch at the Ivy.
Yeah. Because that's what you need to do to become a woman. Mm.
To walking on sunshine. The whole thing's a montage to walking
was
on sunshine.
Were there kind of strange little things that you hadn't predicted or things or like in the adjustment period of like started to go in the men's room and then went to the women's? Like
that's another good one. Because I think bathrooms are, that's a real point of contention. That's where like society clashes is then, over the bathrooms.
Right.
That's where like legally, I mean, there's all kinds of terrible legal things that are going on, like workplace discrimination. You can fire somebody for coming out as trans in most of the states.
You can?
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Gender identity is not covered under anything for most states. California, you can't, and Minnesota, you can't. So I lived in safer states. Prisons are huge. Like if you go to prison as a trans woman and you get sent to a male prison, and then it's,
oh my God,
right, you know, like that's, so there are big, massive life threatening issues for people, that are like in politics now. But the bathroom one is always one too, because it's, and it's legitimate. Like there needs to be a safe space for women. So if you're saying that somebody can come in based on gender identity, are you going to, you know, if you're a rapist, can you claim gender identity to hurt somebody and say that you're allowed to be in there or something? Could you dress up? Could you put a dress on and be a better rapist or something? Which doesn't happen, but it's a slippery slope fear.
But legally...
But legally, it's like something you have to protect because you don't want to really screw up with essentially like a very binary space.
Or even if not even if someone's not even a rapist, but they're just a perv and they're just like, oh, I'm putting on a dress. I should be allowed in here. And it's like, where, you know, how do
it's really hard to be pervy in the women's room because they're stalls. But yeah.
There's ways.
Yeah.
There's ways.
Tell that to Japan.
And then you just push the microphone away like you were done.
That's an issue. But for me, the first day I guess I went full time. I was just like wearing a hoodie, but I had hair and makeup done and stuff, and was shopping with a friend, and I had to go to the bathroom at Macy's, and couldn't go. Like I was just like, I can't go into either. Like I don't. Like I'm gonna get looked at very weirdly in either one of these, and I couldn't go. And so I had to hold it and I was really afraid of it. And then I just started using the women's room and it hasn't been a problem at all. Yeah. So like if I feel like I practice, if I make a certain facial expression and don't speak, like I nobody knows what's going on. So, you know, I don't think of myself as somebody passing, but like for whatever reason, Southern California or because I pass enough, it hasn't been a problem. So I don't know when that... I think that happened at the movie theater. Yeah, I was at the movie theater and I had to go really badly. But I waited until after the movie started. But there was another movie starting, so it was totally full.
Oh.
And but I had to go and I was like, well, I'm just going to do it. And then, you know, just everything becomes easier. So there
is... Well, you can tell us now, why is there such a long line outside of the ladies' room? What is taking so long?
They have to sit down.
I feel like there should be more stalls.
No,
really tackling the issues there, man.
I need to know.
What's
up with the airplane? Why don't they make the whole plane out of the black box? Am I right?
Matt was trying to deconstruct the hacky comedy premise. Why do they take so long?
It's a legitimate question. I always feel bad.
He wasn't trying to deconstruct anything.
I'm trying to make him sound better.
I know, and I've thought about that too. I haven't been in a situation that, but I was like, then I will go into the bedroom. Like, I kind of feel like I get the best. Oh, that's terrible. I was going to say the best of both worlds, which I'm sure is like the name of all the porn sites. But like.
And Clerks.
Oh, was it?
There was like a best of both worlds.
Yeah. So, but I do. I've thought about that. If there's a long line, if I would just like go for it.
Yeah. Just throw on a jag and go, excuse me.
Well, yeah, I don't even have to do that. I mean, I feel like either when I walk into, people are going to be like, yep, okay, that's fine, you're fine.
So just sort of in conclusion, you know, if people are feeling, if people are identifying with what you're saying, or if people are feeling like, what, you know, what advice would you give them? Where would you tell them to go? Who, you know, like what types of support structures are
yeah,
good?
I hope society is doing a better job than, well, okay, this groundbreaking podcast, but I just mean that, like, I think that a lot of people that are struggling, like the kids and stuff, like they've got it. Like there's so many good things happening, and it's being presented in a much more positive way. And oh,
mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Oh. Appreciate it.
We didn't hear anything, but whatever. We didn't hear it was
during
over.
The Batman talk.
Oh, we did it. Let's see if he repeats it.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
All right.
It's not like when you're on the train in New York. It's like, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not here to ask for your money. I'm just here to dance.
Yes.
Oh, God.
So
that guy.
You say kids say
Did
have
you
a much.
Just tell that story to impress us that you go to New York.
I've been on a New York subway.
Hey, I am Queens Boulevard.
Still have that.
So you're saying kids have a much better support structure now,
like,
than they did before.
I feel like there's great resources, but things that help me, like Kate Bornstein is a writer whose book, Gender Outlaw, and then the Gender Workbook kind of like blows up a lot of what we think about gender and is just really helpful. There are a bunch of message boards. There's one called Susans.org that I think is like pretty good about, like, message boards tend to be very like cheerleadery or something. Like, it's just like, just do it. Like, it's the consequences maybe aren't always laid out for people who have real concerns. So if you feel like you want to transition, or you feel like you need to be more authentic but you can't for whatever reason, go to therapy if you can.
Yeah,
like that's been something that was really helpful. And you have to, like, there are these things, they're kind of antiquated and I didn't have to follow them, but there's these things called the standards of care, which is like the medical guidelines for it. And you have to go to therapy before you can get any medical treatments. But mostly it's just like, I guess it's just the same advice that if somebody said, like, how do you become a comedian, or how do you become, you know, it's like you have to just do it. And like, for me, I had all the fears, like, I'm too big. My shoulders are too broad. I'm built like a football player. I've got a career. I'll lose everything. I'll just lose everything. I'll never find love. I'll never, you know, it's just like, I don't even know what else. Like, it's impossible for me. How do I even start? Like, this, you just have to do stuff and tell people and talk to people and confide in good friends. And people, it's hard for people. Like, it's hard for me to say, just do something, because I had such an easy time of it. Like, I didn't get fired because no one was there to fire me, you know, and I didn't get, I have a lot of creative friends who are all cool with it. I have people who think I'm more interesting now than I was before, you know? So it's like, it's like, it's been better for me.
Well, I can say, and then, I think we have like 3 minutes left before the disc runs out. We're still on discs in the E studio. But I can say, even just sitting here and talking to you, it's like such a world of difference, and it just makes me so happy for you, because I don't think we've ever had a conversation like this. And I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but I just remember, like, oh yeah, when you talk to Shad, he's kind of fidgety, you know, like, you're so comfortable and everything's so fluid and so lucid. And it's so, it just, I don't know, just your energy, you just feel so much more comfortable. Like, it's wonderful to talk to you.
Oh, wow. Thanks.
I mean, it's nice.
Does everyone else feel the
same
way?
Yes, Shaddy, we do.
I really just hope that, you know, even if it's not an issue with as much weight as transgender, I hope that if people feel like their identity is like that, they're not who they are, that they still can look at that as an example and go, oh, well, if this person could do this, and that's a much bigger, then I can probably try to be comfortable being more who I am.
And maybe the other person that we try to help is the people that maybe have somebody come out to them. Like, if somebody comes out to you, like, what you say is going to be one of the most important things that they ever hear in their entire life. So just be supportive, like, unconditionally supportive, and you don't need to ask questions. There's time for that. You can Google stuff, but,
and
like,
don't go, duh.
I wish people said duh, because that's like affirmative, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, why are you just waiting for it? Of course. It's the worst thing people say is like, I never would have guessed. I just can't believe it. You macho stud. Like, it's just like, come on. You're making me feel
macho
like
stud muffin.
Or like, I don't know. That's just about, yeah. So, you know, like, be ready for it because it's going to happen more and more now that the world is safer.
Do you want people to follow your Instagram?
Oh, no.
Okay. All right.
Twitter, though, that's fine. All right. And then I'm...
Shadi Petoskey? Did you
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I'm starting a podcast on Feral. I don't know the name of it, but it's going to be about this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And Ooh. Creative transformation and like,
cool.
people going through shit.
S-H-D-I...
S-H-A-D-I-P-E-T-O-S-K-Y.
Yes.
I don't say anything on Twitter. I'm not. It's not about being funny and stuff, but I just want the self-esteem boost.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for being here, and I hope and I do want to I do want to do some more stuff with Puny.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.